नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। शङ्खदुन्दुविघोषेण रामकोषेन सर्वथम् विवेश भवनं
वीरा
श्रूयमानो कथास्मयः शङ्खदुन्दुविघोषेण रामघोषेन सर्वचम् विवेश भवनं
वीरा
श्रूयमानो कथास्मयः। कङ्क् शेल्स्, दुन्दुभि, kettle drums,
Goshena,
by the sound of
Brahma,
Vedic,
Goshena,
chanting,
cha,
also,
Ritvijam,
of the priests,
Vivesha
entered
Bhavanam,
the palace,
Vira,
the king,
Stuyamana,
being worshipped,
Gatsmaya,
without pride.
When
the king entered the palace,
conch
shells and kettle drums were
sounded.
Priests chanted
Vedic mantras,
and
professional
reciters
offered different
prayers.
But
in spite of
all of this
ceremony to
welcome him,
the king
was not the
least bit affected.
By
His Divine Grace,
A.C.
Bhaktivedanta
Swami
Prabhupada.
The reception
given to the
king was full
of opulence,
yet
he did not
become
proud.
It
is said, therefore,
that
great personalities
of power
and opulence
never
become proud.
And
the example
is given
that a tree
which is full of
fruits and
flowers
does not
stand
erect
in pride,
but
instead
bends down
to show
submissiveness.
This
is a sign
of
the wonderful
character
of
great
personalities.
When
the king entered
the palace,
conch shells and
kettle drums
were sounded.
Priests
chanted the
Vedic mantras,
and
professional
reciters
offered different
prayers.
But
in spite
of all of this
ceremony to
welcome him,
the
king was not
the least
bit
affected.
We
are reading
today
in
Canto 4
of Srimad
Bhagavatam,
Chapter
21,
entitled
Instructions
by
Maharaj
Prithu,
Text
5.
Previous
to
this
particular
chapter,
We found a very serious dispute between two powerful, influential directors of the universe. Prithu Maharaj, who is a Shaktyavesh avatar of Lord Vishnu. This means he is a living entity like us, but he is especially endowed with divine powers by the Lord himself to fulfill a particular purpose of the Lord within this world. Prithu Maharaj was the king. How he became king is very instructive to all of our lives. His father, does everyone know his name? Everyone together?
Vena.
Say it loud.
Vena.
Louder.
Vena.
You are following his instructions. Because when he was king, he told the whole world, no more chanting God's name, only chanting my name. The only Sankirtan that was legal was what you just did. What do you need God for? All the gods are in me. All the demigods are in the king. The supreme personality of Godhead is empowering the king. You just chant my name. Every Vedic mantra was for him only. He was a sinful man. He was the embodiment of ego. Everything for me. I am the king. I am great. And he was corrupting religious principles and exploiting people so terribly. He was the embodiment of sin. From a symbolic perspective, he represents the anartas within our heart. What is the basic foundation of all the anartas that cause us to suffer in the bondage of this world? That we want to be the controller, we want to be the proprietor, and we want to be the enjoyer. As long as the false ego dupes us into this mentality, we are cast into an ocean of endless possibilities of frustrations and anxieties, birth after birth after birth. The reality is Krishna is the proprietor and the controller and the enjoyer. But we want to take that position. That was Vena's position. Vena actually was like the ambassador of the false ego of every living being in the universe. Yes, he was representing all of us. But he was doing it in a striking way. He had all facilities. We have limited facilities to express his ego. So what Vena represents is factually the anartas or the obstacles that are within all of our hearts. Now the Brahmins, by the chanting of mantra, they killed Vena. Enechi asadi maya nashi parolagi harinam mahamandra lao tumi magi. He was disease. He was the disease in our consciousness, Vena. I want to control, I want to possess, I want to enjoy. Similarly, when we receive mantra from the bona fide spiritual masters, that mantra can kill the vena within our heart. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I have come with the medicine for the disease of vena, of illusion, of maya, of egoism. Just take this Maha Mantra. It's very powerful. Narasimhadev, he destroyed the anartha, the demon representing within our heart of envy, Hiranyakashipu, with his nails. Ramchandra destroyed Ravana with his bow and arrow. And Krishna with his Sudarshan Chakra. Everything. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with the most powerful of all weapons. More powerful than Narasimhadev's nails, Ramchandra's most sharp, brahminically empowered arrows, and more powerful than Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with the weapon of the holy name. It can not kill, but transform. Transform our demoniac tendencies into wonderful tendencies, divine. Another thing that was very symbolic is after Vena was dead, things got worse. Because a bad king is better than no king. Because at least he may have been sinful and done all kinds of horrible things, but at least he kept other sinful people in check. So now, all the criminals, all the dacoits, had completely free run of the world. And anybody could do anything without any monitoring, without any leadership. People always need leadership. This is the principle of culture, that there is a particular hierarchy of leadership in whatever stage we're in. Everyone follows somebody. In the Vedic civilization, the king follows the Brahmins. The Brahmins follow the gurus, and the gurus follow the scriptures. Everyone's a follower. And the better you are a follower, the better you are a leader. Our own Guru Maharaj used to say that. What is the qualification of a bona fide guru? Very simple. That the person is a bona fide disciple. The most important principle of being a guru is to be a good, faithful disciple. Following. Always. Even 30 years after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left this world from here in Calcutta, Prabhupada was born in Calcutta. His Gurudev departed from this world in Calcutta. Bhakti Vinod Thakur departed from this world in Calcutta. It's a very holy place. That's another subject. Even 30 years after Gurudev had left, Srila Prabhupada was saying, I am always feeling his presence. I am always subordinate under the guidance of his instructions. I am simply doing what he told me to do. This is great personality. You read the writings of the great acharyas. Rupa Goswami, before Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says, I'm simply carrying out the order of Sanatan Goswami. You may like this book. give credit to Sanatan Goswami. He's the one who's empowering me. He's the one who's instructing me. And ultimately, the power is coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in cultured society, everyone is under somebody else. And everyone is giving credit to the person that they're under. They're not taking anything for themselves. By this spirit, one is always protected. And one is always nourished by the profuse showering of grace. As soon as someone takes credit for what they're doing, you can get credit, but grace is cut off from you. And it's grace that's empowering you. You can go on doing great things, even if you're egoistic. But you're not getting much spiritual credit. It's the inertia of your own material abilities that you've been empowered with. When Krishna empowers you, it's a spiritual energy. But when you become proud, what you're doing is you're transforming spiritual energy into material energy. It may look exactly the same to the people of the world, but on a subtle platform, that's what's happening. And when you're humble, when you're actually giving credit and depending on your superiors, then your abilities, your intelligence, by utilizing them in that spirit, you are transforming material energy into spiritual energy. What is bhakti? We can define bhakti in many ways. In certain ways, we can define bhakti from a certain perspective as relationships. From another perspective, bhakti is the art of transformation, transforming material into spiritual. Because when we perform rituals, it's material articles being moved in a certain way with material body. If we're worshiping the deity, it appears to be a material element, stone or wood. And from one perspective, it's a fact. It is wood. It is stone. And it is a flesh and bloody body. And it is, you know, whether it's jewelry or whether it's fire or flowers, it's all material stuff. But when we have devotion, it transforms everything. Our body becomes spiritualized. The articles we're using become spiritualized. Krishna reveals himself through that stone and wood as his own personal Satchitananda form. Our mind becomes transformed. Our heart becomes transformed through apparently physical acts and verbal acts. So bhakti means transformation. The most transformative quality is humility. And the most transformative quality is pride. But they transform in opposite ways. Vena was proud. Therefore, everything about him was materially, grossly an obstacle to everyone. But what did the Brahmins do? They churned by supernatural, mystical methods Vena's body to get the next king. They churned that sinful wretch's body And what happened is by that churning, the first thing is all the sins came out, and then they kept churning, and what came out? Preetu Maharaj. And then amazingly, after Preetu Maharaj, Archie, his wife, his eternal goddess. This is very symbolic. In the West, there is that famous saying that the phoenix emerges from the ashes. And we find in religious history, in almost every single case, God appears and reveals true religion as the most sinful, dark condition is being churned. Yes? Ram appeared because Ravana was conquering the world. If it wasn't for Ravana, we would know nothing about Ram. So we should offer obeisances to Ravana. We shouldn't follow him. We should offer obeisances, because factually, if it wasn't for him creating chaos, Ram wouldn't have come. And we worship Narasimhadev to protect us and to destroy the demons of anarthas within our hearts. In one lecture, Prabhupada says we should offer our obeisances to Sriman Hiranyakashipu. Because if it wasn't for Hiranyakashipu, Narasimhadev would not be with in our lives. And he created havoc. And Kamsa, Sriman Kamsa, and Jarasandha, and all of these people. It's because of them that the devatas were praying, God, please come. Brahma, Mother Earth, was coming to Brahma, and they were all going to the ocean of milk saying, these demons are just causing so much misery and suffering and chaos and pollution. Please save us, Lord. And Krishna came. So from the darkest situations, the brightest light emerges if we turn to God. And we find in the history of so many saints and so many religions that to take people to actually surrender to God with their hearts, usually very difficult situations prompt that. We've been reading about Gajendra. That crocodile was the best thing that ever happened in his life. He would have just died a stupid elephant if it wasn't for that crocodile. But because that crocodile put him in such a life and death suffering, miserable situation, totally humiliating, he surrendered to God, and on that very day he went back to Vaikuntha. Sriman Crocodile. And Srila Prabhupada, whatever obstacles came, he transformed that obstacle into a blessing. So sometimes devotees say, oh, I cannot concentrate when I'm chanting the holy names, my mind is wandering. Or sometimes devotees say, I can't give up this ego, or I can't give up this propensity to find faults with others, or I have such deep-seated, rooted, lusty desires, and how do I deal with that? Or some people are saying, you know, I just can't get along with my god brothers, my god sisters, my wife, my husband, my children, my parents, my brother, my sister. So many apparent impediments. But these impediments can be transformed. They can be the stimulus to help transform you if you are humble. Everything could happen in a positive way if you're just humble. But if everything's going really well and you're really empowered and things are going well, if you become proud, it's all transformed into material energy. So Vena was churned and Preetu came out. Similarly, we have to learn to churn our hearts even in the most difficult times. And how did they churn? They churned by mantra. It's not that they put a churning rod on him. They churned him by mantra. And by churning by mantra, good came out of bad. The divine came out of the ignorance. The light came out of the darkness. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. Through mantra, through our devotional activities, churning Krishna out of the maya and ignorance and of our hearts. Because he's there. Now sometimes it's said, like father, like son. But that does not apply to Preetu Maharaj. He was the exact opposite. He didn't want any credit for himself. Right from the beginning of when he was born, everyone could see his illustrious form. He had all the symptoms of a Mahapurusha. He was absolutely, from the horoscopes and everybody could see he's an avatar of Lord Vishnu. He's going to do such great things. He's just, by seeing him, he was just so benevolent and compassionate to all beings. And the Brahmins were so happy. It was like after the spiritual drought of Vena's reign, Preetu Maharaj was like a fresh, pure monsoon storm of dharma, of happiness, of joy. Can you imagine what a relief it was? And they were praising Preetu. They were praising him. And what did Preetu say? He said, "You should not praise me because I didn't even do anything yet. I was just born. I haven't done anything for you yet." See, he wasn't born a baby. He came out a grown person, yes? He didn't have a Baal Leela. But he said, "I haven't done anything yet, so why are you praising me? You should not praise someone who hasn't done anything." So he didn't want any praise. And the fact was, he was like that his whole life. Even when he did things, it was always, "I didn't do it. God is doing through me." So here we find in these particular chapters that there was a conflict. Because Preetu wanted to perform 100 Aswamedha sacrifices for the welfare of the whole world. Not for him, for us. Because rains, the entire atmosphere is very much affected by the performance of yajna. Due to lack of yajna, that's why there is so much corruption in the world today. The yajna in this age is the chanting of the holy names. The yajna in that age was Aswamedha yajnas for a king. Very difficult. We were describing yesterday, to perform an Aswamedha yajna properly, you had to be the undisputed ruler of the entire world. And every ruler, king, leader, president, prime minister in the whole world had to bow to you and assist you in your yajna, accepting, "I am subordinate, I am surrendered." Who could do that today? imagine an Ashwamedha Yajna on the LOC in Kashmir? Nobody accepts anybody's authority anymore. So Prithu Maharaj and the types of Brahmins you have, they do weeks and weeks of mantras, and every single mantra has to be perfect. If there's one mispronunciation, if there's the slightest anartha or inattention in the Brahmin's mind while he's chanting it, then the whole sacrifice potentially could bring disaster. No one even dared to perform such yajna unless they were really qualified. And you had to have such wealth. You had to be a multi-billionaire. The wealthiest man in the world today couldn't afford an Ashwamedha yajna. What to speak of chanting the mantras properly. Now Indra was so qualified. Imagine how qualified Indra was. He already did 100 of them. He had the world record. And because Prithu Maharaj was about to exceed him, he became envious and fearful of his position because he was proud. He was a devotee who had pride. He wanted the distinction of the record. So he was sabotaging Prithu. And Prithu ultimately, it's a long story, but he actually was about to punish Indra and perform the yajna. And somebody intervened, a higher power. It was like very high level mediation. And told Indra that, please don't disturb. He told Prithu, don't disturb Indra. He is what he is. So don't disturb him. This is a very succinct instruction for managers. Some people just are who they are, and you're not going to change them. And rather than alienate them or cause them to be enemies, just engage them accordingly. Even if there may be some compromise on another level for management. Prabhupada did that. Indra is who he is. You're not going to change him right away. And rather than bringing the worst out of him, bring the best out of him. You will bring, right now, because you're going to do this yajna, you're bringing the worst out of Indra. And look at how it's corrupting the world. If you just say you're not going to do the yajna, you're going to bring the best out of Indra. And it's going to be good for everyone. So Prithu, he wasn't concerned with profit, adoration, distinction, or anything like that. He was doing it for the welfare of the world. If it's better for the welfare of the world, then I won't do it. It was simple as him. It wasn't any painful renunciation. He just, all along, he just wanted what's best for everyone. And he realized it's best to cooperate. In this case, it's best to cooperate even with a person who's off, for the sake of the higher principle of keeping things in proper order in the world. And what happened? When Prithu Maharaj said, okay, I'm not going to do the yajna, then Vishnu came. Vishnu comes after you complete the yajna. When it's a perfect yajna, Krishna comes. Krishna came because he performed the yajna of humility. He performed the yajna of renunciation. He performed the yajna of giving up his own position of being the world champion, the universal champion, for the sake of cooperation. And Krishna came and he was pleased. Very pleased. He honored Preetu. And what was the result? It brought the best out of Indra too. Indra started crying in shame because of all the rascal things he did. And he bowed down and surrendered to Preetu, and he surrendered to Krishna, and he surrendered to everybody and said, I'm sorry, I've done so bad. So he brought the best out of Indra by his humility. Of course, if he was thinking, now Indra's humble, I'll do the yajna. Then definitely he would have brought the worst out of Indra again. So now Indra's humble, he's very submissive. Let's just keep it at this. Because he is what he is. This is a principle of management. A person may be what they are because of deep conditionings and attachments and all these things. But Indra's a devotee. He's a Vaishnav. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha. That very much includes Indra. But he has some stuff to deal with. Many people have stuff to deal with. Leadership is not just to reject people, but to somehow or other bring the best out of people. Somehow or other, when there's conflict, to create cooperation. Not that we compromise the philosophy, not that we sanction sinful or immoral activities for the sake of cooperation, but we just adjust human relationships in such a way to encourage people to become better rather than discourage people where they're going to inevitably become worse. Does all this make sense? So Preetu is honored by Vishnu, and Indra is chastised by Vishnu. And now everything's very cooperative. Now all the devotees of the universal leaders are working together nicely. Something like the GBC of the universe. Now they're all working together very, very nicely because Preetu took a humble position. And he's coming back into his kingdom. And because he's the king, and because he loved his citizens so dearly and was willing to do everything and anything for the citizens, he was a servant. The nature of Preetu Maharaj is he was the servant of every living being. When people talk about servant leadership, that's what Vedic culture is about. No one is master. Everyone is servant. Krishna is the only master, and his greatest pleasure and his eternal lila is to serve his devotees. Everyone's a servant. This is the beauty of knowledge of the absolute truth. Krishna is the strength of the strong, the intelligence of the intelligent, the ability in man. He's giving us everything we have. And if we use them simply in harmony with his will, we become his servant. Jivera Swarupoya Krishnara Nitya Das. The constitutional nature of every spirit soul is the servant of Krishna. We're all servants, whatever position. Whether we're a king or a prime minister or a president or a guru or a GBC or a temple commander or a temple president or a husband in a house or a wife, And whether we're the president of a college or university, whatever our position is, we're supposed to be servants in every sense. I take leadership, I give direction, I may even chastise. But it's in the mood of servant, of every living being, to help them, to lift them, on behalf of God. And even in the topmost hierarchy of existence, Krishna serving his devotees. In Goloka Vrindavan, all day long, Krishna serving cows. Very humble. He's bringing the cows to places where there's nice grasses, and he's finding nice places to have picnic prasad with the cowherd boys. And when demons come to disrupt Vrindavan, Krishna, to serve the Brijabasis, he killed those demons. And to serve them and make them happy, he does it in such unbelievable ways. Yes? When Krishna was dancing on Kaliya, what was happening there? He could have killed Kaliya in a very quick way. He was dancing so beautiful because he wanted to serve all the Brijabasis. He wanted to make a nice performance that would just bring them so much happiness that they would never forget. Nanda Maharaj, bring my shoes. Krishna takes the shoes of his father, puts it on top of his head, and carries it to him. So everyone is servant. It's the most beautiful expression of the heart, is to serve. So Prithu Maharaj, he served his citizens so lovingly that they loved him. This is human psychology beyond spiritual truth. That what attracts love? Love. You know, these beautiful Hollywood, Bollywood people who expose different parts of their apparently nice features. People may be mad after them, but they don't love them. They may say, oh, I love you. Oh, you see a movie and somebody's and we think, oh, I love. But that's not really love. It just means you enjoy them. That's all. But love is not enjoyment. Love is just the opposite of enjoyment. Love is being enjoyed. Yes? So how many of you are being enjoyed by movie actors and movie actresses? Not against them, I'm just using, see? I'm just using it as a principle. You love someone, especially when they love you. Yes? Why do you love your mother and father? Because they love you. They've done so much for you. So if you want people to love you, you do love them. And some will hate you. But that's all right. Keep loving them. That's what all of our acharyas have done. If you can't love the people that hate you, then you can't love God. Give love, and you will receive God's love. And you will receive people's love, good people. So Prithu was just giving love to everyone in a very practical and real way from his heart. And therefore everyone loved Prithu Maharaj. They would give their lives a million times every day just to make him happy. Everyone in the kingdom. So when he was coming back after this various victory where Indra was the champion of accomplishment. Prithu Maharaj renounced the accomplishment of performing those yajñas, but he became a champion of good character. And what invokes people's respect? Your accomplishments or your character? Unfortunately, one of the qualities of Kali Yuga is people honor and respect people's accomplishments. Accomplishments are good, but the substance that makes that accomplishment really respectful, respectable, is our character. Prithu Maharaj is coming back into the kingdom, and everybody is welcoming him, honoring him with so much love and devotion, and they are worshiping him with such opulence. Just for him, the entire city is bedecked with precious jewels and flowers and the most auspicious things. You can't even imagine it. And it was all for him. And all the Brahmins were chanting mantras for him. And the bands were playing for him. And people were weeping and crying in love and affection for him. And they were offering him their hearts. They were offering him all of their material assets. It was an unbelievable worship ceremony. Maitreya Rishi explains to Vidura, but in spite of all this ceremony, there's pages that describe how they arranged an opulent reception for Prithu. The palace, conch shells, kettle drums, priests chanting mantras, professional reciters offering prayers. But in spite of all this, the king was not the least bit affected. Now, what does that mean, affected? Now, different people, according to different states of consciousness, will interpret this affected in different ways. Maybe it meant, you know, his health was not affected. But the Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, brings out what it means that he wasn't affected is that he did not become proud. He was humble. He did not consider that any of that was for him. Srila Prabhupada would also often quote the standard of the viceroy. The viceroy is representing the king or the queen. And all the gifts are given to the viceroy. But if the viceroy takes anything for himself, he's punished, maybe killed. He has to give everything to the king. This is the way a great personality is. Whatever comes, it's not mine. As soon as you think it's mine, ahankara, as soon as you think that I'm the doer, then you become proud. Therefore, we have to hear these beautiful stories from Srimad Bhagavatam. Nasta prayeshya bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya. Every day. Because pride is so deep-rooted. Any little thing we do, we become proud. Look at what I have done. But Prithu, he is showing by his example. All this was coming, but he remained the humble servant of everyone.
And Srila Prabhupada says,
this is a sign of the wonderful character of great personalities. This is the meaning of greatness according to the scripture. We may say a great person, but great means humble, even in the presence of all sorts of honor and success.
And Srila Prabhupada quotes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here.
In the story of Keshava Kashmiri, in those days, nobody cared about football stars or cricket stars. They cared about scholars who were expert in debate. Those were the matches that really attracted people, scholarly debates. Different type of culture. So Keshava Kashmiri was the champion. He was so intelligent, it was said that Goddess Saraswati was her favorite. Whenever he spoke, she incarnated on his tongue. Can you imagine what kind of sounds came out of him? It was eloquent, it was beautiful, it was sweet. He was the chosen one. But he became proud. So proud. So many people were glorifying him and honoring him that he had all these first-class learned Brahmins who just followed him around wherever he was going, Keshav Kashmiri Kijai, and singing all complicated Vedic mantras and just to glorify him. He was carried on beautiful palanquin, and he would go town to town just challenging people and defeating them and getting them to sign his certificates of defeat. Came to Navadweep. And Nimai Pandit was just... Nimai Pandit, please understand, was just a grammar teacher, which is the most basic, fundamental level of Sanskrit. Keshav Kashmiri was a master of the highest, most technical. It was like a PhD professor from IIT meeting a first standard teacher in a government public school. As far as ranks, literally. So Nimai Pandit was really a great debater and scholar, but still, he was just a grammar teacher. So Keshav Kashmiri, oh yes, you are that grammar teacher I heard about. Saying that, he's practically like demeaning grammar teacher. What is it? And Nimai so sweetly, he told... When his friends were glorifying, when his students were glorifying Keshav Kashmiri, that he's so great, Saraswati's on his tongue and he defeats everyone, he knows everything. Lord Chaitanya's God. Very important to understand this pastime. Because in this pastime, sometimes the most essential messages we read and it just escapes us how important it really is. We just, you know, read on. We just read the story and some jewel, some precious jewel of wisdom is there and we just pass right by it. We miss it. But Lord Chaitanya, he revealed such a jewel of wisdom. He said, well, before what he said, he's God. He's the absolute truth. Sam Siddhir Haritoshanam. All our spiritual advancement is only according to how we please Krishna. It's not what we do, it's how we please Krishna. That's what bhakti is about. Bhakti is not about how you do things or the rewards you get. It's about how you please Krishna. What pleases Krishna? The friends are talking all about the glories of Keshav Kashmiri. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that a great person who has good qualities is like a tree that is heavily laden with ripe, sweet fruits. Because of the weight of those fruits, the tree bows down its head in a very submissive way, always. Amanina manadena, offering respects to everyone, not expecting any in return. A tree without good fruits stands up very straight in a very proud way. Very deep. From Lord Chaitanya's perspective, from Krishna's perspective, what is great is depending not on what we do or what we accomplish, but on our character. And the most prominent quality of character that the Lord is emphasizing here and throughout his lila is humility. Humility and devotion. Amazing Keshav Kashmiri, because the fact is Saraswati was moving his tongue by her own sweet will. And Saraswati is a divine goddess. So he had connection to the divine world. But he was proud. Lord Chaitanya knew it all. And then Krishna told his friends that Krishna does not tolerate false pride for very long. In due course of time, he crushes it to pieces, to powder. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so when he, Keshav Kashmiri, came to Nimai, Nimai offered him all respect. And Keshav Kashmiri kind of demeaned him. He was very attracted to his beauty. He said, oh, you are the grammar student. I mean, a grammar teacher. And the Lord, with honor and respect, he welcomed Keshav Kashmiri and said, please recite the glories of Mother Ganga. And Goddess Saraswati did her work. She just went on his tongue, and 100 slokas, original slokas, he composed right there on the spot. Not that he was writing and crossing out and changing, and on the spot, he composed original, brand new, never heard before slokas on the Ganga. And he was reciting them like the wind. It was just pouring out of his mouth, very loud and very fast. And the entire 100 slokas that he composed originally speaking, there was no gap. For even a second. He didn't say, well, 1 minute, let me think. Just came. Like nectar flowing from his mouth, like the Ganga, flowing profusely. And all the students, now please understand, these are the students of Nimai Pandit. They had very high standards of what they appreciated. They were like, they were amazed. They didn't sound like that. They don't sound like donkeys like me. But they were amazed. They were just like, jai. They couldn't believe it. It's beyond human for anyone to just compose. They were so beautiful. Such decorations and ornamentations of style and technique and language and such deep meaning. Huh. It was all poetry. Every line rhymed perfectly. And Nimai said, very good. Now please explain to us the good qualities and the faults of what you did. Keshav Kashmiri said, there is no faults in anything I do. How could there be fault? Goddess Saraswati is doing. But he's considering him the doer. You see, even if you don't consider yourself the doer, but if you're proud that Saraswati's chosen me and not you, that's even worse than thinking you're the doer. Yes. Pride is very, very mysterious. We're proud because we think we're the doer. But actually, Krishna and Guru are empowering us. But even if we think, yes, Krishna is empowering me, and I'm doing such fantastic things, he's empowering me, but he's not empowering them like this. To see how special I am. To see how Krishna's choosing me. I am the chosen one. That's also false pride. I'm not the doer. Krishna's the doer. But because he's doing through me, that means I'm better than everyone else. That was actually Keshav Kashmiri's condition. He knew Saraswati was doing, but he was only through him. So Nimai pointed out mistakes. And here's the greatest debater. Now in those days, to debate, you were so expert in logic and everything else that Lord Chaitanya, he would do this when he would talk to the students of Navadvip. He would challenge somebody, and then somebody would give their answer, and he would totally defeat it. Then they'd say, can you defeat this? And they say, impossible. It's undefeatable. And then Lord Chaitanya would defeat what he just said. And they'd say, can you defeat that? Impossible. And then he would defeat that. Can you defeat this? He said, it's impossible. And then he'd defeat that and come back to the original person's original statement and prove that to be correct. Can you continue to defeat this? And they're just saying, we surrender. Sometimes he would prove the person right and they would have to surrender to him because of the way he did it. So someone like Keshav Kashmiri, they don't even have to be right. They can, through their word jugglery and their unbelievable intelligence and their eloquent speech, which is just profusely saturated with alankars, with ornamentations, they can prove even the wrong thing to be right, even to the greatest scholars. That was his power. So here's the grammar teacher saying, please show your faults. So there is no faults. Nimai showed some faults. And Keshav Kashmiri, for the first time in his life, his mind went totally blank. He couldn't think of a word. He prayed, Saraswati, where are you? She wasn't on his tongue anymore. And all the students laughed. God, big scholar, can't even answer our little teacher. Yeah. Couldn't say anything. And Nimai, he said, no, do not laugh. He gave honor and respect to him. Nimai said, you must be very tired, that's why. Because you're just like the wind, you composed 100 verses in glory of Ganga. You must be very tired. That's why you can't answer my question. So please go home and take rest and study your books, and tomorrow we'll ask you some questions. So in this way, he didn't humiliate him. This is Nimai's it's his instruction in management. You get the job done, you correct a person, but you have to be very careful to keep them encouraged. If you break a person, you lose a person. Because Keshav Kashmiri was so proud. If Lord Chaitanya would have broke him, all Lord Chaitanya would have to do is say, you have no answer, you lose. To lose to a grammar teacher, Keshav Kashmiri, it would have been too much. He would have probably drowned himself in the Ganges. It would be such humiliation. Lord Chaitanya wanted to transform him and do it in a way that would encourage him and bring him up rather than just smash him down. In Krishna consciousness, defeating somebody is to bring them up, not to push them down. That's expertise. Lord Chaitanya defeated Prakashananda Saraswati and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Venkata Bhatta. But what was the effect of his defeating them? They were not just crushed and humiliated. They were ecstatically grateful and became devotees. That's the ideal of how to defeat someone in Vaishnavism. Because we don't have the pride, we don't want to be the champions, we just want to serve. So Keshav Kashmiri was really dumbfounded. He went home to his room and he understood what happened. Goddess Saraswati betrayed him. Where were you today when I needed you the most? You didn't give me, not only did you not appear on my tongue, but you blocked me from even thinking. Where were you today? What happened today? A child, a mere child, defeated me. And then he was thinking, I must have done a serious aparad to Saraswati. That's why she's abandoned me. And then he went to sleep. And Saraswati came to him in a dream. And in essence, she said, because you're my devotee, I've done like this. Nimai Pandit is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever I know, I get from him. He's the Lord. Don't be attached to scholarship and fame. I'm his servant. You should be his servant. This, Saraswati said, my favor to you was not that I made you the Digvijay Pandit champion of the world. My real favor to you is I brought you to me, my pundit, and I caused you to be defeated. That's my real favor to you, because the purpose of life is to humbly surrender your heart to him. First thing in the morning, Keshav Kashmiri, all alone. Usually he's with all of his entourage of fans. And he came and fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet, surrendered his life. Lord Chaitanya said, "Why are you doing this?" He said, "Because Saraswati appeared and told me you are the Lord of the universe." And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to him that the purpose of all the knowledge of the Vedas is not to become a scholar, it's to become a humble devotee. And the perfection of scholarship is to become a humble devotee. Character is based on humility, according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Good character is based on humility according to these pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the greatest quality of Prithu Maharaj, that he could do so much and always remain a humble servant of the servant of the servant of everyone. He was willing to take the role, and he was even willing to accept all the worship of being a king. There's different kinds of humility. One kind of humility is, don't worship me, forget it, get out of here. But Prithu Maharaj, he allowed everybody to worship him. It's not that he's turned around and said, take all this jewels and flowers and vermilion and yogurt and your auspicious grains, take it all away and then I'll come back. No, he came in to get rid of all the Brahmins and the bands. He came in and accepted it all. All the bands and all the Brahmins. It was more than Keshav Kashmiri by thousands of times. He accepted it all. He allowed it all to happen. But in his heart, it's not for me. I'm accepting it only for the purpose of serving the people who are giving it. It's a reciprocation of love. That is greatness. That consciousness. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasa hishmina amanina manadena kirtane sadahari. Whether you're a king or a topper in IIT or IIM, or whether you're the CEO of a massive international business, or whether you're a professor, or a teacher, or a housewife, or whether you're a field worker, a farmer, or whether you're working in a factory, or whether you're unemployed. Whatever your situation may be, Trinadapi suniche nataror ibasiheshna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadaha. The principle is to become humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, offer all respect to others and expect none in return. Because these qualities, which are considered by God and the Acharyas to be great. A great man or a great woman is one who possesses this character. Nothing else. Everything else is decoration, but the substance is character. In that spirit, Krishna's pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, When you chant the holy names, Krishna manifests in a very, very sweet and intimate way, cleanses your heart, and awakens the dormant love within you. Real greatness is to chant the holy names, following in the footsteps of the great souls. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Ram. Hare Ram. Ram Ram. Hare Hare.
Such a gift that Srila Prabhupada has given us. A gift of the deepest, most profound, but the simplest understanding of connecting with God. And cooperation is very, very essential. Prithu Maharaj's greatness is most spotlighted by his willingness to take a humble position for the purpose of cooperation. Prabhupada said, if we're united, we can make the whole world Krishna conscious. Because Krishna is pleased by that unity. But if we're not united, that's the only way Maya can stop our progress, is disunity within among ourselves. And what does it take? What does it take to have unity? Prithu Maharaj is showing. Sometimes you have to take a humble position and adjust, thinking about the whole picture of what's best. And that's greatness. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Requires intelligence. Real humility is based on intelligence. When someone presented a dharmic philosophy to Prabhupada, he wouldn't say, "Oh, I accept defeat from you." He would smash it and crush it. Yes? He would defeat it. He would defeat misconception. That was humility. For Arjuna not to fight would have been false ego. For him to fight was humility. But he was not doing it. He was doing it with an intelligent understanding of what's actually beneficial. Yes? So to take a false humble position in such a way that we're actually hurting people and we're misguiding people, that's not real humility. We have to have a proper intelligence of what's best. Lord Chaitanya defeated Keshava Kashmiri in such a way that was the best for everyone. Prithu Maharaj took a humble position, but he did it in such a way that it was best for everyone. Yes? And another thing, and in the example of Prithu Maharaj and Keshav Kashmiri, they both had the guidance of superior authorities. Saraswati told him how to be humble in that situation. And who was it, Brahma, that came down and explained to Prithu Maharaj? Yes? So real humility has to be based on knowledge, guidance of parampara, not just speculation. If even Prithu Maharaj needs the guidance of parampara to understand how to apply humility perfectly, what is our position? But that was his humility. He accepted Brahma's words. And he acted on it. So we should be always seeking higher guidance. And the idea is, as servants, we want to manifest the humility that we're cultivating in such a way that it effectively serves the people we're with, and it effectively brings about a beneficial Krishna conscious environment. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Sometimes the most disturbing situation is
him.
I wanted to ask about humility.
Loud, please.
And I wanted to ask about humility.
According to the time, place, circumstance, and people, this has to be carefully analyzed. Is it envious antagonists? Is it Krishna conscious authorities? Is it peers? We have to deal accordingly. Envious antagonists are trying to destroy our movement in every possible way. So certainly, you know, we either ourselves or others should try to clarify situation. But usually envious antagonists are going to keep doing it no matter how much it's clarified. Yes? When it comes to peers or superiors, the first thing we should think is, what am I doing wrong? Why are they saying like this? They're my well-wishers. How can I improve myself? Maybe there is some flaw that my ego is just not allowing me to see. Because the nature of pride is you don't like to see your own faults. well, maybe I should really take an investigative look and see, perhaps there's ways I'm supposed to improve in this, necessary ways. That's the first thing we should do. And then after, as thoroughly as possibly, trying to clean up our own hearts and our own minds and our own words and actions, and really trying to understand why they may be saying this. Maybe it's there. Maybe I don't see it, but it is. That's the first all of us should do when either authority or a peer finds some defect. And then after that, after we honestly and sincerely and thoroughly do that, then if we find that things are just not understood properly, then we clarify it. Does that answer your question? And ultimately, by doing like that, we get, that's how we get good reputation. By just defending ourselves, it actually ruins our reputation. Because everyone has faults. If somebody admits their faults and tries to improve, then people honor and respect them for that. If there really is no fault, or people are antagonistically trying to drag you down or something, then you should just speak. No, it's not true. You have a right to do that, to defend your service. But the first thing we have to do is the person, an antagonist trying to tear us down, or is it a well-wisher who's trying to bring us up? And accordingly, we have to act in very different ways. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, Radharaman Prabhu. Please give Radharaman Prabhu the microphone. It looks like he has a question. I'm sure it will be a very, very deeply philosophical inquiry. Speak in microphone, please.
T4 now.
Huh?
It's 8:54 now, so we should leave in 3 minutes.
As your humble servant, I will obey. Thank you very much.